From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Jennifer Miller is my guest. She's the author of Inheriting the Holy Land, An American's Search for Hope in the Middle East. Her work has appeared in lots of places, including the New York Times. And now she has written a novel, The Year of the Gadfly, in which a 14-year-old girl is obsessed with not Justin Bieber, but rather Edward R. Murrow. Jennifer Miller, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks so much for having me.
So your book, it's kind of a mystery, so I'm going to let you tell us what you think we should know about your novel before we get into it.
Sure. So I would situate The Year of the Gadfly in the prep school genre of novels, and I do kind of see that as its own distinct genre. And it follows Iris DuPont, who is a 14-year-old aspiring journalist who suffers a tragedy in her hometown of Boston, and her parents take her away to this very secluded town in northwestern Massachusetts. And Iris begins an investigation both of a new teacher at her school who she suspects is hiding something about his past. She's also investigating a secret society at the school of made up of a group of student outcasts that is exposing the iniquities of students and faculty in the community.
Well, there's sort of time shifts in the story, right?
Mm-hmm. So there are two narrative streams. The first one follows Iris in 2012. There's also narration from the perspective of Iris's teacher, who she's investigating. And then there's a second narrative stream that is set 10 years earlier, which is set in, 1999-2000, which follows the science teacher as a boy and the people that he was in school with. And those two narrative streams intersect throughout the book, and kind of what Iris is investigating comes to light as the book progresses.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that there's this, that the whole story takes place pretty much in the 21st century, even in the two time zones, time streams of your story, because, you know, for me, the 21st century just got started. In fact,
right.
I remember around the time of your other time period in your story, that I remember going into the Gap, and there were some t-shirts on sale. That's where I get this shirt here that I'm wearing. So, you know, it's for me, that time hasn't gone very far, but yet the people have really, I mean, their whole lives have changed. They went from being children to being adults. What about you? I don't know how old you are exactly, but did that happen to you also?
Sure. So I'm 32, and I guess when I was a teenager, I was roughly I was a little bit older than the kids in the 1999-2000 narrative period, and so I'm a little bit older than the teachers in the 2012 period. But in a lot of ways, the narrative in this book is based on my own adolescence and coming of age, and so I was writing a lot from life in that sense. So I wanted to make sure that I had a really good handle on what was happening, both in the period when in 1999 when the kids are, you know, sophomores, juniors in high school, but then also now when the science teacher comes back to his old school as an adult, and kind of what his life, you know, in 2012 would be like.
And what about prep school? Is that something that you experienced also?
Yeah, so the school in Gadfly is a kind of a strange hybrid between the school that I went to. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I went to this very progressive private school. You know, we called our teachers by their first names. We had an open campus. Things were, creativity was really encouraged. It was very liberal, but also incredibly PC. I would say probably way too PC. So I took some elements of that, particularly kind of the fixation on, you know, equality that in some respects is taken way too far. And I fused that with my brother's school. My brother grew up, my brother went to an all-boys private school outside of D.C. that was extremely conservative. They had a uniform, you know, very traditional. And so the school in Gadfly is kind of a strange hybrid of my school and my brother's school. I would say it's a little bit closer to my brother's school because it really, the school that I've created, Berriana Academy, really does have a very rigid, has a very rigid social structure, for one thing. There's almost like a social caste system that many of the students are trying to fight against.
Now, having a protagonist that's obsessed with Edward R. Murrow, now you were have had a brilliant career as a reporter, and so I'm thinking maybe when you were young, you were interested in Edward R. Murrow. How would a 14-year-old girl have ever even heard of Edward R. Murrow?
No, it's true. I mean, well, to be honest with you, I had no interest in journalism. That's not exactly true. I was the editor of my high school newspaper, but I came to that very reluctantly. And in fact, you know, growing up in Washington, D.C., my parents were kind of dismayed at the fact that when I was younger, I really had no interest in current events at all. And so when I was bad as a kid, instead of taking away my TV privileges, they would force me to read the Washington Post. That was
well. That is a punishment.
Yeah, that was kind of my punishment. So I really liked the idea of, but then I became a journalist, and I love journalism, and I've been working as a journalist for the last 10 years. And you know, I've really come to see journalism as the cornerstone of our democracy in so many ways. You know, this whole idea of speaking truth to power, which essentially is what a good journalist, you know, is trying to do. And so when I was thinking about the character of Iris, I really liked the juxtaposition of a 14-year-old girl who really, as you said, should be obsessed with Justin Bieber, not with, you know, a deceased, middle-aged, when he died, journalist, chain-smoking journalist like Murrow. And I just had this image of this young girl kind of walking down the road beside Murrow, this image of Murrow, you know, in his, you know, impeccably tailored suit with a Camel cigarette in his between his fingers, and the two of them having a conversation about the dreadful state of broadcast media in the 21st century. And so that juxtaposition, I think, created a really interesting plot line. And also tension for the character of Iris, because she really sees Murrow as this ideal, but of course, you know, Murrow's a human being, and he had his own dark side, and he had his own internal conflicts, and she kind of has to come to see that over the course of the novel.
Yeah, and again, not to give anything away, but it's kind of a play it again, Sam, almost kind of a thing where, you know, at first she's conjuring up Murrow to talk to him and ask his advice, and then after a while, you know, he just appears whether she wants him to or not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so again, as I said earlier, she has suffered this tragedy. I don't want to give too much about that away. And her parents have sent her to a psychologist, you know, who's trying to assess her mental state. In part, her mother sends her to this psychologist because she catches Iris talking to the wall. Now, Iris is talking to Murrow, and Iris in the beginning of the book knows that Murrow isn't real. She knows that she has invented him. But as Iris, as the book progresses, and as Iris kind of succumbs to her grief over this tragedy that she suffered, her relationship with Murrow and kind of her conscious relationship of deliberately conjuring him begins to grow a little more hazy, and she slips, I think, into the anxiety and the depression that, you know, her parents were really hoping to guard her against.
We're talking with my Goodreads friend Jennifer Miller, and her new novel is called The Year of the Gadfly. And you read obsessively, Jennifer. I mean, most people have read, like, you know, I have to read a lot from the bookshelf, but most people don't read quite as many. You read, how many books have you read today? How is it that a person like you can read so many books?
I mean, I'm not sure that I read, you know, substantially more than most writers. And I see reading as part of my daily work. So, so every time I go to a bookstore, it's kind of great because I feel like I'm on the job. You know, I get my inspiration from reading as well, you know, as well as from journalism, being out in the world, meeting new people and experiencing new places. But then, you know, one of the best ways I find to get inspired to sit down and write is to read something that's really wonderful. And that always motivates me. And, you know, that's part of the reason why Goodreads is so fantastic, because it's just, it's this community of readers and people who just glory in reading and love reading. So,
well, of course, we love it here on From the Bookshelf.
That's, of course.
That's what our show's all about. What have you read lately that you want us to all know about?
Let's see. I just finished reading You Remind Me of Me by Dan Chon. He writes a lot about the Midwest, and his books are they're a little bit on the depressing side. I mean, he follows characters who are trying to overcome their loneliness. And I'm actually reading him because I'm working on a new novel now, which follows a road trip from Tennessee to Utah, and I've done the trip myself, but to kind of keep it fresh, I want it to be immersed in other books that kind of follow at parts of that same landscape.
Anything else? That sounds like a good one. I just wrote it down. What else?
Man, I'm so bad at coming up with ideas. A favorite of mine that I read recently is Gary Steingart's A Super Sad True Love Story. I'm a little bit biased because I studied with Gary at Columbia. And he appears in my book trailer, and he is absolutely hilarious, both as an actor and as a writer. That book, the protagonist of that book is kind of an alter ego of Gary, I feel like. So it's an interesting, I wouldn't go as far as to say totally dystopian picture of America, but definitely a futuristic one, in which kind of obsessions with consumerism and technology have been taken to an extreme. And Gary's really great at portraying that in a way that is both humorous but also a little bit frightening. So definitely would recommend that as well.
Well, in fact, listeners, I want you, when we're done talking here with Jennifer Miller, I want you all to go to YouTube and look up this this hysterical trailer that she's made for her. And you know, books do not usually have trailers, but this book, The Year of the Gadfly, maybe they do have trailers and I just don't know about it, but your trailer is hysterical. Tell us a little bit about this trailer and how you came to make it.
Sure. So because the book features both a teenage journalist, Iris DuPont, as well as an adult professional journalist, Edward Murrow, I thought it would be fun to combine both elements into my book trailer. So I decided that I would have both teenage and professional journalists reading from the first page, I was able to get amazing readers on the hook to do this. So first of all, I've got fantastic teenage journalists from around the country, Maryland, Kansas, Brookline, Massachusetts, Cathedral City, California. So, you know, all over the place. But then we've also got Brian Williams and Dan Rather and Sam Donaldson. Sam Donaldson is my favorite, by the way. He is hysterical. Amazing reader.
I was staring at his hair the entire time.
Yes, his hair is quite fantastic. Actually, David Carr, who is the media critic for the New York Times, tweeted out a link to the trailer and referred to Sam Donaldson's epic hair, and that was the perfect description. And then, of course, some wonderful female journalists as well, Christiane Amanpour and Andrea Mitchell, and a bunch of other people.
You said you got them, but how did you get them?
I don't know. I've been telling people that I held auditions, and they were the best. So it was a combination of things. So I'm a journalist. My husband is a magazine editor in New York, so we have a lot of contacts. And then my father worked at the State Department for 25 years on Middle East policy, and through that he got to know a lot of journalists over the course of his career. And he's often called up to go on to shows and talk about the issue of the day. And the lesson is that you are very nice to the producers, and then if you call them up, then they'll consider an idea like this. And I think in part, having the high school journalists read alongside the professionals, I think that was part of the reason that a lot of these eminent professional journalists were really interested and willing to do this, because we're entering a completely different journalistic landscape now. Newspapers are obviously dying, and There's a huge shift, and I think they really want to encourage the younger generation to be excited about this field, as do I. So I think that that was also part of the reason that they were so enthusiastic about participating in the trailer.
And I want to talk about TV journalism with you in a minute, but I want to ask you first, you mentioned your father and the Middle East in one sentence there. So, and you wrote this great book about the Middle East, Inheriting the Holy Land, about Palestinian and Israeli teenagers. Mm-hmm. And that, now you've written a novel about teenagers. Is there a connection to all this?
Yeah, there's definitely a connection. So I would say that there's a thematic connection between Inheriting the Holy Land and the Year of the Gadfly, and that is I'm really fascinated about outsiders, and particularly young people who find themselves to be outsiders in their communities and who have to struggle to speak truth to power, to assert their own identities, and to try to find a place for themselves. So that was a huge theme in Inheriting the Holy Land, you know, looking at how young people in both Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza were, you know, dealing with the Second Intifada. I was there in 2003 and 2004. And then, of course, you know, the novel Gadfly is a completely different situation. You know, I'm writing about a prep school in Massachusetts, right? So it's not, you know, it doesn't have the same kind of gravity. But I, as I said before, I base this novel a lot on my own personal experience, and one of the main characters is actually based on my high school boyfriend, Ben, who was killed in a car accident the summer before our senior year. And Ben was somebody who really fought to fit in and was an outsider and, you know, really made this push to try to, you know, be himself in a community that wasn't always supportive of him. And I saw this book as a way to honor his memory and a way to kind of bring him to life in a certain sense. And so a lot of the characters in Gadfly, for various reasons, emotional, physical, find themselves kind of on the fringes of what's accepted, and they're kind of fighting to have a voice.
Well, you know, you were talking about being a young person who was completely uninterested in current events when you were young, and you have a young person in the story who's obsessed with journalism and current events, and you were just talking about the television journalists who were anxious to help you because they want young people to be interested in journalism, and at the same time, I mean, most young people are not at all interested in current events, as it turns out. Do you think young people will read your book? Will prep school students read your book? Will non-prep school students? Who's going to read this book other than all of us who love good novels?
I think that this book, to address the issue of you know, teens and prep school kids reading this book, I think absolutely. I mean, the journalism thread is one part of a narrative, you know, that's pretty complex in terms of what it covers. And there's plenty of, not to trivialize what's in the book, but there's plenty of mean girls, bad behavior, the type of, and the kind of bullying that, you know, I think is unfortunately really prevalent right now that we see in the schools. So I think that there's a lot in here that young people would be drawn to. And just because it features a journalist doesn't mean that it's dry. You know, I think that was my kind of misconception when I was a kid. I thought of, you know, reading the newspaper as really dry. I mean, the novel's not written like a newspaper, even though there's a newspaper in the novel. But it's actually an underground newspaper that called The Devil's Advocate that is exposing all of this bad behavior. So it's actually, I would say, a little more exciting than, you know, what a teenager might think of when they think of journalism. But I also think that, you know, adults would really love this book too, because I think it reminds us of what it was like to be in high school, which, you know, isn't always a positive thing. But I really tried to tap into that, the authenticity of being young and striving for something, and kind of the way that we feel so intensely about our relationships when we're that age and the things that we're passionate about. I in a way I kind of feel like we when we're 14, 15, 16 years old, we feel more passionately. We feel things in a more intense way, perhaps, than a lot of us do as adults. And I think that adults adults will enjoy tapping into that and kind of feeling that emotional power.
I think that's what I was talking about when I was talking about my T-shirt. That is, I think because time goes so much faster when you're young than it goes when you're older. Remember when a summer was like, oh man, that's like, you know, all, like so long that you go when you're on vacation. Whereas now, that's like 2 seconds. It's already planned and it's practically over and it's almost Christmas already.
It's true. On the other hand, I agree with you, but I would also say I think this is part of the reason why, you know, some of us, when we look back on our high school experiences, we may do so and grown a little bit, is that, you know, when you're that age, especially when you're in school, it seems like you're going to be there forever. You know, it's very hard to imagine life outside of that very rarefied environment. And that's one of the things that I was trying to get across in Gadfly, that in a way the school is its own complete ecosystem, with its own, naturalistic order. And the students are constantly struggling to break out of that, but it's very hard because, you know, they're teenagers, they don't have any power. And I think when you're in that very intense environment and you don't see a way out, there are consequences to that, emotional and physical consequences.
Do you think, what was the experience like for you to write a novel? Which, I mean, you've been a reporter, you've been a nonfiction writer, and now you're writing fiction. How do they differ, and which did you like better?
It's hard to say I liked one better than the other. They are so different. I would say that for me, writing nonfiction is a little bit easier, because I go out, I report, I have all of the information, and then it's a question of figuring out how to fit this information together. Whereas when I'm writing a novel, I have to make up all the information.
Right.
And that's the hard part. You know, even if I am drawing from life to a certain extent, I still have to present these characters as fully fleshed out, well-rounded. I need a compelling plot. I need to include all of these details. You know, in journalism, I subscribe to this. If the car is blue, it better be blue in the story. You know, you don't change details. You don't mess around with the truth in that way. Whereas in a novel, you have total freedom, which is really exciting, but it's also a little bit scary because you have to make all these choices. And you never know whether you're making the right choice or not. And I think for that reason, I mean, this book took me 7 years to write, and I wrote multiple drafts of it. And I have to say, like, it was very hard, but I loved it. I love the challenge, and I love being able to play with language in a way that is more difficult to do when you're writing straight journalism.
Well, I'm interested in this, you know, the multiple drafts thing too. What were the things that you were changing? Did you start with your characters and then you had your plot that you kind of laid over it, or was it all developing at once? How did it work?
Yeah. So it went through a couple of stages. The event in the beginning, there were only two narrators. There were still the two time periods, but there was one narrator in the present and one narrator in the past. And Iris DuPont, who is really the primary narrator, she's a narrative force in the novel. She did not exist until about 4 or 5 years in to the process. So you can imagine the serious rewriting that went on once I created Iris. I think if I had been writing a book that was structured in a more simple way, you know, that had one narrator and just moved chronologically, I don't think it would have taken me 7 years to complete. There was a lot of, because I had to juggle two time periods and three narrators, I gulp because it sounds so overwhelming. I did not want it to feel overwhelming to the reader. I want it to feel seamless. I want you to be able to keep track of both storylines and the main characters. And so it really took a lot of work to perfect that, to make sure that the two time periods really integrated in a way that made sense, and had the right momentum and revealed the right, you know, elements of the mystery at the right times. And so I kept rewriting the book until I got it. And when my editor said, "You've got it," then I put my pen down.
Well, now, is that experience something that's going to serve you, or will it be, you know, 2019 before your next novel?
Hopefully, fingers crossed, it will not be 2019. I actually just finished a first draft of my new book, which took me about 2 years to do that first draft. And I am about to send it to my agent for revisions. So, you know, I'm actually hoping that she has a lot of notes for me, because something that I liked about spending so long on Gadfly was that I got to be so invested in the entire process, and I love that. I loved living in this world of the book. And with the new novel, even though I've been working on it for 2 years, I'm not at that point where I'm really inhabiting the world in the way that I need to be. This is kind of my gut feeling about it. So I'm thinking that she'll probably have a lot of notes for me, and then I'll really be able to dig in. But, you know, I hope that, you know, we can get this done in a much shorter period of time.
So the rewriting process is something you look forward to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there were definitely stages while I was, you know, there were points in the drafting process. In one point in particular, when I had it took me 4 years to finish a first draft of Gadfly. I gave it to my agent. She read it. She gave me the kind of obligatory, like, "This is great." And then she was like, "Okay, you're going to have to basically rewrite 3/4 of the book." And, you know, that was a terrifying moment. And I could have stopped, you know, I could have said, "Well, I got this far and I work really hard on it. And I, you know, it's, who knows if I'm ever going to get it right." And, in part because I'm a perfectionist and I'm really neurotic about all this stuff. Like, I can't stand to have this negative feedback just sitting there and then put it in a drawer and walk away from it. Like, I'm like not wired to be able to do that. I said, okay, after I freaked out, I like freaked out for like a good 24 hours, and then I came back to it and I was like, all right, I am going to take all of these suggestions. I'm going to tackle them one by one, and I'm going to figure out how to make this book better. And kind of every time that I get criticism, and you know, I'm looking for constructive criticism, and that's what's great about having an agent and an editor, is that, you know, they're giving you very constructive, specific criticism. I see all of those notes as an opportunity to do something even better than I've already produced. And that's challenging and really exciting.
Well, of course, now that the book is here, then everyone who reads it will critique it, and you'll see a million criticisms, good or bad, on Amazon and Goodreads and so forth.
If I read them, I will see them.
Yes, but you don't need them now because the book is finished and it's not, that's right.
Right, yeah. I mean, so actually initially I had a Google alert of the book. I had a Google alert set up of the book title, with the book title.
Yeah.
And it was clear very quickly that, like, I just emotionally, like, couldn't deal with it. So I took the Google alert away. Now my husband has the Google alert, and
he'll filter it for you.
Yeah, he screens everything and sends along the stuff. And actually, I had to talk to him the other day because he was withholding stuff that was like mixed in any way, and I was like, no, like, you know, if there's something positive, I want to see it. Just don't give me, just, you know, if they're like, "This is the worst book I've ever read," like, don't send that to me. But, yeah.
Well, congratulations on the book. It's called The Year of the Gadfly. It's a novel by Jennifer Miller. And thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. And please check out the trailer. It is so fun.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next time. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or find us on Facebook. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. And I want to thank my guest, Jennifer Miller, her novel, The Year of the Gadfly. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.